Welcome back to the Ed Morrissey Show podcast. Joining me, as always, the Prince of Twitter, the Regent of RedState.com, Andrew Malcolm. You're looking relaxed for a prince.
Ed, you look exactly the same as the guy I've been doing this podcast with for years.
Yeah, you know, I'm a master of disguise.
Boy, I guess. And you're going bald.
Well, I think going is generous. I think that's a generous way to look at things, but thank you, my friend, for pointing that out. You know, I think the news broke on that this week, but unfortunately it broke on CBS News Radio.
Oh my gosh, isn't that something? That's you know, I'm sure they're making a decision on the basis of economics and station subscriptions, but boy, what a legacy. I mean, that goes back to the 1930s, and names that were legends, Edward R. Murrow, Walter Cronkite even, Eric Severide, Robert Trout, was it Edward C. Hotlett? Oh my gosh, those were voices that brought the Blitz in London to American live to American listeners. It was just, what a legacy. They were on top of everything. Eric Severide was my hero. He wrote a book, Not So Wild a Dream, that I read in high school, and I just fell in love with him. And he actually answered my letter, and I met him years later. But he and his wife were evacuating France as the Nazis took over Paris, and she was having a baby, and he was covering the war.
Yikes.
Talk about pressure. Holy smokes.
You know, I think William Shirer, if I'm not mistaken, I think William Shirer.
Yes, him too. Yep. And there were a couple, there was an Edward, anyway, those names, and they went on for years after on CBS TV. Eric Severide was the Brit Hume of CBS. Oh, geez, what a legacy! And I know nothing about the economics that caused them to do this, but it's just what great memories and great coverage. I mean, the courage of these guys out in the Blitz. You know, they could have been evaporated, and there they were talking about it as it happened.
Well, you know, I work for a radio network, right? So yeah. I got to be a little careful about this. But the problem with CBS News Radio is that it just didn't have very much compelling content. And that's actually the problem with CBS News on television at the moment, too. It's one of the reasons why they brought on Barry Weiss, right? Which is that they're not really offering compelling content. My understanding, by the way, that this is mainly a news service provision to radio affiliates, yeah, that we're talking about. We're not talking about shutting down radio stations per se. These are stations that are buying affiliate licenses for, and apparently it's not going well. And I think you'll see other radio networks try to fill that gap, you know, with their own news services. But or, you know, maybe the Associated Press too, which has its own radio distribution. But this is part of, I think, a reckoning for legacy media organizations, you know, that simply put, they've lost credibility, they've lost traction with their audience, and mostly because of their own fault. They're not hiring the William Shirers and Edward R. Murrows any longer. They are hiring activists. Yeah. Yep. Under the job title journalist. And
you know, those guys that they hired, they were all professional newsmen.
They all came out of print.
Yeah, Walter Cronkite came out of UPI. All the other guys came out of print. So they were real journalists. The ones they hire today for TV are pretty boys and girls, and the ones they hire on the radio were young and shallow. And no sense of history, just exciting short news bursts that, I mean, it's like eating one M&M. It's useless.
Eating one M&M. Having one Frito-Lay's potato chip. we're not sponsored by anybody here at the Ed Morrissey Show. And I want to emphasize that point because we wouldn't mind being sponsored by people here. That's, you know, right. HEB, for instance, you know, they're delicious, nutritious, soft drinks.
I already finished my Diet Coke, but I'd be open to that sponsorship.
Well, there you go. See, and we are just scratching the surface of all the possibilities here for.
That's right.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yep. Yeah, that was pretty sad. let us not ever do that again. Okay. What I want to say here is the problem with this is that I don't know that they can dig themselves out of that hole. And I think that's what Barry Weiss decided too. It was expensive. It was personnel heavy to run this. And there's probably not a lot of hope of revitalizing this. And even if there was, it probably wouldn't have had a whole lot of revenue attached to it anyway, not enough to make it to make the effort and the investment worthwhile. So you cut your losses and you focus on television where, you know, there's a lot of money at stake.
So think about it. If you hear there's a big news story breaking, or if you want to make sure you don't miss a breaking news story, if you're driving, of course, it's radio. But otherwise, it's your phone or your laptop. You know, I mean, it's or television. You don't think to go run into the kitchen and turn on the radio as my family did when I was younger.
Right. Yeah.
Much younger. Yeah.
Well, I think that there are people who still do rely on the radio. And I can say that because we are a radio company and we have a news division, and our news division actually works pretty well.
Well, commentary too.
We have commentary. I mean, we have the radio stations, right? But we actually also have SRN News, Salem Radio Network News. So, and that's a straightforward, you know, headline news service that appears at the top of the hour for people who subscribe to the service, not just Salem stations, but it's offered, you know, pretty broadly. That's kind of what CBS News is shutting down right now. Barry Weiss is shutting down the analogous service over at CBS. There's room for that. But the problem is that you have to have people who report news rather than do narrative maintenance, which is, you know, we discussed this term last week, and you put it in your column. It's a great column, by the way. And we should talk a little bit about that because it relates to this. And something happened today. Noah Rothman pointed this out today. I'm going to use that as an entree for your column here, Andrew, which is that Donald Trump early this morning,
Monday,
was one of the Monday. Yes. I'm sorry. Monday, because this will go up on Tuesday. And this is why you need editors, by the way. That was an example of why you need editors. I am honored to be edited by Andrew Malcolm, the Prince of Twitter. Yeah,
and me too. Me too.
Noah Rothman, maybe not so much. No, I'm kidding. Noah used to write for us. He's a friend. I'm just joking around. But Donald Trump announced this morning that he was going to extend the deadline on an ultimatum that he announced on Saturday night, saying either Iran allows traffic through the Strait of Hormuz to go unmolested, or we're going to start wiping out all of their electrical production facilities, which is a step that he hasn't wanted to take because he wants to preserve that infrastructure for whatever regime might succeed the current regime. And of course, Iran said, well, we're going to bomb everything in sight, which they've been kind of doing anyway. So this morning, which was about 12 hours, I guess, prior to the end of the ultimatum, he announces we're going to wait 5 days because Iran's starting to talk to us. And we might be able to get, you know, they're starting to talk seriously. We might be able to get what we want out of this. He's not suspending anything else. He just isn't going to enforce the ultimatum until Friday night, right? This is what the announcement was, or maybe Saturday night, whatever you count 5 days off of. And the Iranian news agency Fars, which is operated by the IRGC, this is not an independent news agency. The media alliance is, nobody here is talking to Trump. No, not direct, or, you know, direct. Nobody here is talking to Trump. It's not happening. It's not happening. Barak Ravid, who reports for both Israel's Channel 12 and for Axios here in the United States, and is a pretty reliable guy, reports almost at the same time that, yes, there are indirect talks taking place at the behest of Egypt, Turkey, and Pakistan, who've arranged to talk with somebody. Now, Donald Trump's True Social post had a very interesting construct in it, which was that he said that he was talking with the country of Iran, which I tend to think means that he's talking about the civil government and not the IRGC. So I don't think anybody in the IRGC is talking with Trump directly or indirectly, but that doesn't mean that talks aren't taking place. And I'm certainly going to take Trump's word over Fars's word on this particular point. So Noah Rothman says, the American media immediately leaps into this saying Donald Trump is, you know,
Is he really talking to somebody?
Is he really talking to anybody? Is that really true? Is Donald Trump lying to us? And Donald Trump doesn't know what he's doing. And it's, you know, Trump always chickens out Monday, Taco Monday, rather than Taco Tuesday, blah, blah, blah. I'm thinking, you guys really don't learn anything. What a damn thing. And if you think that you're going to rely on Fars, I mean, I get politicians lie here, okay? I get that. But I'm not going to use Fars as evidence that there's lying going on here. It's absurd. That's the IRGC's mouthpiece. And yet, as Noah Rothman points out over at National Review, everybody seems to have just leapt to the conclusion that Fars is telling the truth and Donald Trump is lying.
The same way they trusted Hamas's casualty numbers in Gaza. Yeah.
Yeah, the Gaza Ministry of Health. Yeah. So right up there with the Gaza Ministry of Truth. Look, and I'm not saying that Trump isn't beyond BSing his way through things. We've seen him do it, right? So it's not that the possibility doesn't exist, but it's pretty clear, I think, what the strategy is here. The strategy is to try to separate the civil government away from the IRGC. There's clearly a vacuum at the top now with all the leaders being killed in the first, you know, hours of the war. And I think they're trying to promote this idea that there's infighting, or at least trying to push on some fault lines here to get some infighting going so that the IRGC will collapse and you can get what you want from the successor being, as you know, it's not good either, but the, you know, the parliament and the president, Pezeshkian. And you'll notice that they've been targeting IRGC and Basij leadership. They are not targeting Pezeshkian. He's out there. They could find him if they want to. They just don't want to. They, Ghalibaf, I think, is the parliament speaker who's associated with the IRGC, but he's a parliament speaker now, and he's part of that elected government. And the other people that apparently haven't been hit are the regular army leadership. And I suspect what's happening here, and anybody with half a brain could probably figure this out, or at least come up with the hypothesis, is that what Trump wants is he wants the civil government to split from the IRGC, because the IRGC clearly is trying to conduct a coup here and install a military junta, and perhaps peel the regular army off, whatever assets there are, though probably all infantry, so that the military, regular military, throws in with the civil government, ousts the IRGC, and starts cutting deals with the West. Now, that's not the best outcome. The best outcome would be that the whole regime collapses and you have, you know, peaches and cream flowing in Tehran and everybody's part of a new completely free Democrat republic. But it's a lot better than some of the alternatives, including you can bring an end to the war and you can restore shipping through the Strait of Hormuz without destroying literally everything in the region to get there. And I'm just amazed that nobody can count to five in the media these days.
Well, that's why they come here, listeners, because they have you to count on.
Because talk about your column, because and you.
Yeah. Well, I think your theory is really good. It's also an example of the dangers of military intervention like this. Yeah. Barack Obama joined the European countries in seeking to oust Muammar Gaddafi. It took them 9 months, and they did. But what they got was not a free Libya. They got a lawless state with militias and terror training groups fighting amongst each other. And now Mideast powers like the Emirates are picking sides. And Turkey picking a side. I mean, it's a mess. Now, Libya, it's got oil, but it's not like Iran. It's not as important as Iran. And Libya, Gaddafi, gave up his nuclear weapons arsenal in 2001. And the deal was, we'll leave you alone. And then the West went back on the deal 10 years later. So if I was Iran, I wouldn't agree to any deal in North Korea that the West will honor them if they give up their nuclear weapons. But you know, we're facing a, I hope not, but a potential civil war if we have the army, as you mentioned, and the Revolutionary Guard on opposite sides end up fighting. And remember, it's not the Iranian people. The Iranian people is a huge mix of all kinds of ethnicities, including Kurds and Azerbaijanis and Shia and Sunni. They've all been arguing. They were suppressed, but they've all been arguing for their own independence. So you could have an Iran without the stern, ruthless leadership of the mullahs flying apart and everybody fighting each other. And I mean, that's a mess, but that's what happened. Wars are messy. And as General Mattis said, the problem with finding peace in a war is it takes two sides and the other side has a say. I don't know about you, Ed, but after all these years since 1979 with the mullahs and their armed forces taking over, I don't think they're going to quit this quickly. They may, you remember, what was it? Monty Python and the Holy Grail when the knight was fighting the other knight and he cut off and he cut off one arm and he'd say it's just a flesh wound, and then he cut off a leg and another leg, and pretty soon it's just the head talking. And he said, "No, come on, you chicken, take me on."
He says, "All right, we'll call it a draw."
You know, John Mosier, who's a wonderful military historian in New Orleans, has a regular analysis column that I highly recommend. I quoted him in the Sunday column of mine a couple times. He points out that not only did the regime, the mullahs, at the very beginning shut down communications and contact with the outside, but the allies have snuffed an awful lot of communications operations. And he was speculating that perhaps nobody in Iran knows what's going on. They know that bad things are happening, but they don't really realize. And they're like the Black Knight, you know, come on, we'll take you on. And they don't know that they don't have anything left to take Trump on.
You know, it's possible. I suspect that the IRGC is pretty well aware of what they've got and what they don't have. And right now, their missile capacity seems pretty resilient. You know, we had the story this weekend about the two missiles being shot at Diego Garcia, which completely exposed Iran's intermediate range ballistic missiles, which they were claiming they didn't have. They were claiming that all their ballistic missiles had a range of what would be 1,200 miles. You and I were talking about, we're commenting on this and on Twitter, then all of a sudden they shoot two missiles at Diego Garcia and apparently get close enough to matter.
They didn't get close. Neither one got through. A jet shot one down and the other one failed.
Failed. So, but the trajectory would have carried them 2,400 miles. It was double the range that they had admitted to. And this is what Donald Trump was talking about before the war. He said they are developing missiles that can hit all of Europe and eventually are going to develop an intercontinental ballistic missile that can hit the United States. And everybody's going, no. All their missiles are short range. They're 1,200 miles max. That's what they told us.
It's so naive. Barack Obama, in the first few months, he tried to buy cooperation from Putin for no bargaining, just a free gift. He canceled the missile defense system against Iranian missiles.
Yep.
Going to Europe and going to the United States. I guess he must have believed them too. He canceled it in Eastern Europe without alerting Poland and
The Poles were furious over that. I remember that. That was 2009. Yeah. It was his first year in office. Yeah.
Right. Right. And to add salt to the wound, Obama canceled his trip when the Polish president got killed in a plane crash. Accidental plane crash. Mm-hmm. He canceled his trip to the funeral to play golf. So he played golf after the Japanese tsunami too. So he bought it. And of course, Putin said, well, thanks very much. And then he sold a nuclear reactor to Iran. And
it's still operating.
Yeah. And a... an air defense system, which didn't
which
work
is no longer well. Operating.
Yeah. And it wasn't operating very well in Venezuela. So, and that was Chinese too. So, we are so naive. And here's the thing, and this is a personal thing. I don't think, and Trump must know this, he wrote in his book that the most important thing in negotiations is the willingness to walk away, to just throw it away. But we'll see after 5 days if he walks away. He has not in the past when it comes to Putin. He's not walked away. Lots of deadlines, lots of ultimatums, and he doesn't walk away. And so Putin knows it and continues to play. Well, I hope he doesn't, as far as Iran is concerned, because while Putin's threat to keep on annexing European countries is more distant, the Iranian threat for having nuclear weapons that can be delivered to people who are non-believers on non-believers, that's very real. And he needs to snuff it now. And I don't think experience, what was it, how many years, 40? Almost 40 years, 47, yeah. All these years, death to America. They've been fighting a war for 47 years against us. We haven't been engaging, but we've been trying to buy them off. How many billion did Obama send? We've been trying to negotiate. They have nefarious negotiations, which aren't true. Finally, Trump drew a line. And even Condi Rice, who's not always been a big fan of Trump's, was praising him for finally facing the facts that Iran, you can't negotiate with. You got to finish it and finish it now.
Yeah, yeah, exactly. So the other part of this, too, is it doesn't really cost us anything to wait an extra 5 days. Assuming that the negotiations are going on, and there's really no great reason to think that they're not, especially with Ravid's reporting on this. This is, by the way, one of the reasons why I tend to follow the Israeli media, which is also, because if you understand politics in Israel, everything's to the left of America. Israel just is. You know, conservatives are to the left.
Yeah, same in Canada.
Canada is at least as bad, right? But the media tends to get things right because the media is really invested in getting the data out there. It's just a different media environment.
Iran is existential to them.
Yeah, it is. It is. Yeah. And this goes beyond partisan concerns, right? Yeah. So even Haaretz, which is way left, is probably getting most of this right. Although Haaretz is kind of like the Guardian in terms of its reliability. Yeah, it's all right. But stick with the Times of Israel and the Jerusalem Post, because those are the most newsy news outlets that you've got there. KAN's pretty good. Channel 12's kind of good. Channel 12 is sort of like a little glitzy sort of thing. But Times of Israel and Jerusalem Post do real reporting. And they curate wire services reporting that relates to Israel. So if you're interested in following what's actually happening without the filter of narrative maintenance, as Andrew and I point out, and Andrew quotes in his excellent essay this week, check that out. I would suggest following it there. Now,
can I just say about the column? The column examines, it's an analysis of how the American media and Democrats cannot believe I've intentionally missed the success of the Iranian war, and document all these occasions, and even Condi Rice and others. So if you want to see how they've been, well, fooled is the wrong word because it's intentional, but how they've bought because of what you said last week, narrative maintenance. Yeah. Everything Trump does is bad. It has to be bad. Therefore, winning a war by Trump is not acceptable, even if it's America's security at risk.
I do have to say, though, I'm very impressed to be living in the age where the very first 3-week quagmire ever.
Oh, well, I read
the quagmire where you have air supremacy over the entire country that you're fighting, and you've sunk all of their navy
in daylight.
In daylight, yeah, in daylight.
You know, part of the column was listing some past wars and how long they lasted. And then to talk about, like you said, a 3-week quagmire. please.
These guys, they're all in a rush to be the first to write, this is the Vietnam War. And this is... I understand what they're trying to do, but it's... We have gotten to the reductio ad absurdum stage of narrative maintenance. They were all rushing to write quagmire on day 3 of this thing when it didn't finish over the weekend.
Yeah, and these are the younger reporters and writers and editors, for that matter, who are eager, desperate, I would say, to find reasons for a Trump failure, yeah, or even phony evidence for a Trump failure. I mean, CNN story, making it up. My God.
You know, I mean, it's, people are saying, well, Trump doesn't have a plan. How do you know? It's been 3 weeks. It's 3 weeks.
Yeah. Do you think he's going to share the plan with you?
You know, it kind of reminds me of that scene from Airplane where, the lead character, the pilot, is talking to his girlfriend in that scene that's supposed to be from From Here to Eternity, where they're making out on the beach and the wave crashes over them, and the wave actually crashes way over them, and it shows him from supposedly from the ground up, and he's got kelp in his hair as he's talking to Julie Haggerty, right? He says, oh, you know, we're shipping out tomorrow. We're gonna fly over Macho Grande. I got 3 squadrons. We're gonna hit this, 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 and this. And she says, well, when are you coming back? She says, I can't tell you that. It's classified.
Yeah. This is the most, well, I suspect, I mean, I hope that some of the unidentified sources. 3 unidentified sources who are familiar with the situation. When they're talking about what Trump is considering, I hope it's hot air and blather, or
false. Oh, hey, watch out with the hot air stuff.
Oh, yeah, sorry. Yeah, steam.
There you go, yeah.
Steam venting. Or what did they call it? A false flag operation in which they say, wow, we're going to go do this, but don't tell anybody. And hoping that they run out and tell everybody so the Iranians get ready. I mean, we did it in World War II.
Supposedly that's what they did with Tucker Carlson, right? They told Tucker Carlson, they had him up to the White House. They told him, oh, don't worry, we're just bluffing. We're trying to get the Iranians to back down. Now, I don't know if this has been confirmed or not, but this is a story that was going around because Tucker was at the White House. And they did talk about this. And apparently, as the story goes, we'll find out somewhere down the road with how true this was. They made Tucker Carlson think that they weren't going to attack. So he would go back and tell them that they weren't going to attack. I don't know how true that is, but it certainly.
Well, I mean, these things, these stories, you know, they, even World War II, they got a homeless body and they planted invasion plans on it, and the submarine dumped it just off the French coast or the Spanish coast. So the Germans would find it, and they bought into it that the invasion was going to be on other beaches, not the ones where they were really going. War is hell, but...
War is hell. That's good enough. Just talk about it that way. Yeah. All right. Well, go read Andrew's excellent article over at redstate.com. It sounds like Andrew is... missing the audio here. Not sure why. There you go. Are you hearing me now, Andrew?
I hear you now, but I was getting a message, unstable network connection.
Maybe that's what we should call our podcast from now on. Stable network connection with Andrew Malcolm and Ed Morrissey.
These guys are pathetic. Hear them now.
Yeah, hear them. Spend a half an hour with them, finding out just how pathetic they are. I think at the end, trust me, because we have jokes of the week, which is, of course, what's coming up now.
Oh, great. Well, let's see. I got a couple. You go ahead.
All right. So an officer in a small town stops a motorist who is speeding down Main Street. The man starts to say, I can explain. And the officer says, why don't you just be quiet? I'm going to let you cool your heels in jail until the chief gets back. And that guy goes, officer, please let me explain. He says, I told you to keep quiet. You're going to jail. So he hauls him off to jail, and a couple hours later, the officer looks in on him and says, well, it's lucky for you that the chief of police is at his daughter's wedding. He'll be in a good mood when he gets back here. And the guy says, don't count on it. I'm the groom.
Oh, I did not see that coming, Edward.
Yikes. Yikes. All right, you go with one of yours, and I'll give you the next one after that.
Okay, so these are old. Jay Leno said, Facebook introduces a next generation messaging system that incorporates email, IM, and texting all in one. It's designed to create a world where nothing gets done in the workplace ever again.
Somebody got me a mug one time. It said something like, I'm trying to remember what it is. It's great. Normally I'd be able to get this multitasking, a great way to do two things half as well as you do one of them, or something, you know, or it's that effect.
Yeah, I love stuff like that.
Yeah. All right. That wasn't my joke though. Here's my joke. Mailman's going around on a Monday morning, going on his usual route, and he sees one of his usual homes that cars are in the driveway where normally people are at work. And the homeowner is coming out with a load of empty beer and liquor bottles, right? And the mailman goes, well, Bob, you guys had one hell of a party last night. And Bob says, well, actually, no, it was Saturday night. And I'm just getting over it, man. I've been sick ever since. And he said, well, it must have been really great. And he said, well, we had about 15 couples over from around the neighborhood for the party. And it got a bit wild. He says, it got so drunk. We all got so drunk that around midnight, we started playing Who Am I? And the mailman says, who am I? How do you play that? He says, well, Bob says, all the guys go into a bedroom and we come out one at a time with the sheet covering us and only our privates showing, right? Through a hole in the sheet. Then the women try to guess who it was. And the mailman laughs and says, damn, I'm sorry I missed that. And Bob says, yeah, it's probably a good thing you did because your name came up 4 or 5 times.
Oh,
hey-o. Hey-o. Who am I?
I have one more, and that's Jimmy Fallon, an old one, said the Senior Olympics were in California last weekend, but 90% of the athletes tested positive for Ensure. And the Chinese gymnasts claimed to be 90, but they were only 86.
Wow, that's a scandal. No, that's a scandal. All right, I got one more for you. I got one more for you. This one, this one, it's a puzzle, so you have to answer, okay?
So, I'll play.
What do you call a person who can speak 3 languages?
Multilingual.
Multilingual, okay. What do you call a person that speaks 2 languages?
Bilingual.
Bilingual is correct. What do you call a person that speaks 1 language?
Monolingual.
American.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
All right. Well, I got that one from Jokes of the Day. And I was scrolling past it as we were talking. I was like, throw this one in there. Andrew will appreciate this one.
That was a quick personal story. Many years ago, I was in Denmark and I was in a, what do you call it? Not Copenhagen, out in the country. Amsterdam? No, in Denmark.
Oh, in Denmark. I'm sorry.
Yeah, that's another country.
That's Holland. Yes, I'm sorry. Yes.
Yeah. that was the joke. No, I was out in another city and I was walking around trying to find a famous castle. And I had my book, Danish, and there was a woman with a baby carriage out for a walk. And I stopped and I asked her in Danish, very clumsily, I was trying, where this castle was. And she let me try for a couple of minutes. And then she said in perfect English, "What exactly are you looking for?"
Yeah.
Well, you know, at least you made the effort. Americans don't usually.
Americans do not usually make the effort. Yeah. And I got to tell you, and again, I traveled to Rome and Italy a little bit more broadly 4 times, right? And you can get by with English unless you get in a cab. They do not like to speak English in cabs. They want to speak Italian and they're very irritated with you otherwise.
Yeah.
And so I had enough Italian on the times that I went. It's extremely rusty now. I'd have to go back and start over again with it. But I knew enough Italian to be able to have these conversations and I never had a problem with the cabs except one time. And it turned out it wasn't my problem. I gave him the correct number for the street where he was supposed to take me. And it occurred to me, he was going the wrong direction. And it took me a while to realize this. And I said something to him, you know, that, you know, where are you going? I said this, and he was very embarrassed. It was not a, you know, because the first thing you think of is, oh, this is a scam. He's going to run me all over the place.
Yeah.
But no, he was very embarrassed because I had spoken to him in Italian. So he knew better. He just blanked out. So he turned off the meter and drove me where I was supposed to go, apologizing the entire way. I felt so bad for the guy. Gave him a real nice tip. I said, it's okay. Everybody makes mistakes. He was apologizing in English, too.
Oh, hey. You know, one of the
not great English, but he was apologizing in English.
One of the things that's so impressive when you, or not impressive, what's the opposite? Unimpressive. When American presidents go abroad and they always have interpreters, which I get because they're taking notes. But when you see foreign leaders like the NATO chief or anyone else, they all speak English, German chancellors, everybody speaks English. And it's very exciting, actually, to see Marco Rubio speaking perfect Spanish and then switching instantly to English. That's just, especially for a Secretary of State, holy smokes. He was at a ceremony recently with Vice President Vance, and he was speaking Spanish. And when he got done with one part of it, he turned to Vance and said, "I just said I got an incredible deal by switching to Geico." Rubio is so smart.
Yeah, he's sharp. He's very sharp. Yeah. All right. Well, that's it. I mean, we've kind of gone over time. We told more jokes, I think, on this show than we've told in the last four podcasts. Yeah.
So, what the heck, right? Well, that'll get our subscription numbers up and we'll get some sponsors.
Yeah, that'll double our sponsorship for this podcast. All right. Andrew Malcolm, the prince of Twitter.
What's up with that?
What's up with that? What's up? What's up with that? With the lack of sponsorship? That's what I want to know. Andrew Malcolm, the prince of Twitter. My favorite Andy Rooney impersonator, because I know that I'm your favorite Andy Rooney impersonator.
That's right. Exactly right.
CBS Radio, by the way. CBS Radio is where Andy Rooney came from.
That's right.
All right. Andrew Malcolm, Prince of Twitter, at AH Malcolm on Twitter. Go over to redstate.com. Be sure to read his columns over there. And we'll be back again next week, folks.
We sure will. Take care. Thanks, Ed.